Hi everyone, you're listening to Into the Dark. Just a quick reminder that if you have questions for our research department and you want them answered either on the air or off, email those to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. That's intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. I'll see you on the back end of the theme music. Stay tuned for Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers, and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not always evil.
The often erotic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down, of course.
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, the show that takes you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. It's a beautiful day here in Brooklyn, so we're doing something a little different. Instead of recording this episode in the studios in Bushwick, I'm hanging out in Saratoga Park, which is a very small park in the middle of Brooklyn. The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, the squirrels are active in the dirt, and it's really beautiful, though a bit unsettling given that it is still February. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about emoji magic, going to be teaching you how to make your own sigils if you want to, and playing an interview I did with somebody who has a skinwalker in his family. Skinwalkers, for those who are unfamiliar with them, are essentially malicious witches in the Navajo tradition who are thought to possess the ability to shapeshift. They can sort of take on the forms of animals at will. And they're often sort of regarded as being very scary. A lot of people are incredibly reluctant to talk about them. The fellow I interviewed said there's a skinwalker in his family, but he was really only willing to speak to me on the conditions that the interview be conducted anonymously, and also with the understanding that because he's living in New York now instead of near the reservation where his family lives, which is many hundreds of miles away, like, he's far enough away from it that hopefully that distance will also have a protective element to it. So let's just get right into it. So the first question we're addressing today on Into the Dark, actually the only question we're addressing, is, dear Into the Dark, I've heard that people sometimes do magic with the emojis on their phone. Is that a real thing? Is that a thing people do? Well, thank you for sending in this question. Really appreciate it. Great question. And the answer is yes. People do that. So emoji magic falls under the umbrella of a larger kind of magic called sigil magic. And I know sigils have come up on this show before, sort of mentioned in passing, but we've never really gotten into the meat of what those are. And essentially a sigil is any kind of symbol that is thought to have magical efficacy in some way. Now, part of that might just be it allows you to focus and direct your own magical efforts and energies, or it might just have some sort of power in and of itself. A good example for this, for people who are sort of unfamiliar with the idea, is in a lot of vampire movies, you'll see that people will hold up a crucifix or a cross to scare the vampire off, and the vampire will react as though the cross can even sometimes burn the flesh of the vampire. And in that sort of instance, in a lot of ways, we could sort of say the crucifix is maybe being used because it's a holy object, it's a sacred object, but in some instances in these films, people will take two pieces of wood and put them together in the shape of a cross, and that will have the same effect, which sort of suggests that that cross is being used as a sigil. It's being used as a symbol with magical powers. By recreating the sigil, you're able to access those magical powers. And the idea of using these sort of symbols for magical purposes is very widespread, and it goes back a long, long way. I'm a big fan of Norse sigil magic, so the Vikings essentially had a language of their own. Like, they're sort of, the alphabet that they used was also often used not just for communication, but also for magical purposes. And they were able to make a lot of sort of magical symbols by taking two letters or more and putting them on top of each other in interesting ways. And I'm a big... I mean, these are very pretty to look at, I think, because they use a lot of sort of geometric shapes. And the thing is, a lot of these, you know, sigils are received. You learn them from somebody else, but you can also make your own. And so at the end of the show, I'm going to teach you some basic techniques for making sigils for your own purposes. But before we get to that, so emoji magic, people do it. And I didn't know much about it, so I decided to sort of reach out to various esoteric communities that I am aware of to see if anybody in any of those groups did this and if they were willing to sort of explain their practice. And so I found somebody in one of the Carolinas who was willing to speak to me about this, provided that they remained anonymous. So I will not be revealing this person's name, but we had a nice conversation over the phone, and we ran into a bit of a difficulty, because the plan was that I was going to record my end, and she was going to record her end, and then we put the two halves together when it was done. But what ended up happening is something went wrong with my phone, so I got all of her answers to my question in pristine, perfect sound, and lost all my questions. So I've sort of put it together and added in a bit of a play-by-play, just to sort of give you a sense of the context of what's going on. Because, I mean, we got her answers, and those are the important parts. So here's a practitioner of emoji magic talking about that practice, and then, well, I'll see you guys afterwards. One of the first things we talked about is when emoji magic would be particularly useful. Like, when you would choose emoji magic as opposed to a different technique.
Well, first off, I'll start by saying that, like, my idea of magic is kind of... it's unique to everybody, so nobody's gonna have one singular definition of how things are. For me, and for how a lot of other people seem to kind of conceptualize of emoji magic... it's kind of a subset of a really minor movement in which people are trying to utilize contemporary technology to get magical results. So with emoji magic, you would be using it sort of in a visual sense, like a sort of like a sigil in that respect. The way that I would think about it is like, I'm a very visual person from just kind of in general, so I like to use sigils kind of across the board. I think if you're wanting something really super specific, it might not be well suited to that. So something with a lot of high risk, you know, the kind of idea that if you don't fully specify what you're going to say, then you might really ruin your life. I might avoid those sort of things, but... you would use it kind of in the same way that you would use any other symbol. So for me, it's kind of symbols or spells that could use a boost, and ones that maybe you would put online or in the public eye, and ones that could kind of, I guess, crowdsource your energy that you're pulling from, if that makes sense. when you do these sorts of things, even if you say, you know, like the unintentional aspect or the intentional aspect of being involved in the spell and contributing their energies, it can be really useful to... I think the process of interacting online can be really useful when you consider that, you know, you're using an electronic medium, which is kind of electricity being inherently a type of energy. Also... the nature of social media, when you like things and you repost or retweet things, kind of gives it an extra power because, you know, you can make a spell in your room and you're the only person that really contributes to it. But if you post something on Twitter and people retweet it, then more and more people are going to see it, and you can design it in such a way that it sort of snowballs with its efficacy.
And so I asked her about specific emoji spells that she had done.
So the most recent one that I did, and I mentioned this in previous discussion with you, I think, is my boyfriend was going to fly across the country for a job interview. So I used certain emojis that would kind of indicate the things that I would wish for him to go well, like a safe travel, so like a safety helmet in an airplane, a person speaking to help him not have issues with speaking in his interview. Kind of a suit and tie for flourish, but also for, you know, boosted professionalism. I think I like emoji magic because the way that the individual interprets the symbols can help inspire them to find the resources within themselves to get their goals met. I'm a really big believer in that there's no one central way to approach magic, and that it's all kind of about almost tricking ourselves mentally into accessing these different results. And so the individual interpretation of the symbols is, to me, going to have a lot to do with the way that a different person would use them.
Then we got into talking about her background and how she had gotten into doing magic.
I guess I'll kind of have to go on a little bit of a tangent to fully explain it. So the way that many people are getting into magic and the occult and such these days is obviously through the internet. In younger generations, I think it's safe to make that assertion. So there are different pockets of different types of magical communities. On Reddit, you know, you have the occult subreddit, which is very classical. You have the Aleister Crowley fans, the Thelema, and you have the Chaos Magicians, Golden Dawn, I think it's called. I'm not as versed in those types of magic, but I do try to educate myself as often as possible. There are also maybe other websites that offer different types of approaches. In my younger days, early college, spent a lot of time on Tumblr. Just incidentally, I didn't happen to go there for magic, but I happened to search there first for information, because a lot of my interest in the beginning was aesthetic and sort of chasing that feeling that you get when you read a fairy tale or, you know, you see a movie. And for me, witchcraft and magic has a lot of that, and that's where a lot of power comes from for me. So it's interesting the kind of divide that I see between maybe what you would consider more gendered communities, Reddit with a more socially masculine presenting way of doing things, and Tumblr with a more socially feminine way of presenting things. And their approach is a lot more, you see a lot of Wiccans, a lot of kind of people who just consider themselves eclectic pagans, but a lot of it kind of derives directly from the Wiccan tradition and is maybe reactionary or responsive to that. A lot of that has then, when you look at the solitary practitioner side of Wicca, this sort of homey and using what you already have around you as magical tools, whereas maybe somebody who is more traditional and looking at these more structured ways of doing rituals is going to want, you know, the full-on, the robes, the daggers, the chalice, whatever. There's a lot of, like, home witchery and, like, kitchen witches and people, just bedroom witches, which has maybe a lot to do with the fact that they're younger people, teenagers, that don't have access to the monetary means to buy more expensive implements. And that's all relevant, I promise, because then if you start thinking about, well, if it's permissible within one's practice to use anything available to you, then what is stopping us from using technology? And so some things that I've seen is people were using posts and the nature of Tumblr, in which I'm not trying to insult your intelligence, but for listeners who don't know, it's called reblogging, where you repost someone else's content to your own blog, and seeing what you can get out of the power within that. So people, I think, started using emojis as a means of doing witchcraft, and I noticed that, and so I started playing around with it personally, in kind of after seeing that. Different people will obviously use it different ways, and of course the medium that you use it in might be a little bit different than depending on, or rather your method of doing it might be different depending on the medium. So if you do it on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or Tumblr, it's all dependent on the nature of posting content to those websites.
The conversation then moved to how she first started learning about emoji magic. Was it experimentation, or was there a community that she was able to find and learn from?
Yeah, so I think there are, well, objectively, yes, there are people who are already using emoji magic. It wasn't something that I necessarily came up with in any respect. But these people aren't necessarily solely using emoji magic. I wouldn't call it a community. It's more so a specific practice. In places like Tumblr, a lot of people kind of like to mentally categorize themselves as specific types of witches, and you can kind of see some backlash against that in more traditional communities. So Tumblr might say, oh, I'm a space witch, or I'm a sea witch, or whatever, and what that really means is they're doing spells, they find themselves drawn to spells that are within a certain subset or related to a certain topic. So maybe you would, you know, use the imagery of constellations if you're a space witch. So, one group that I've noticed is, like, kind of, they call themselves urban witches or techno witches, and they will use technology as a whole, not just emojis, but, you know, they might find themselves using technology in any way that seems to fit them at the moment, sort of similar to chaos magic, but with an emphasis on technology, I'd say. It's not so much a community, and it's not so much an idea that I came up with, but it's something that I noticed and I guess began to implement in my practice when necessary.
And so I asked her about that. How did emoji magic fit into her larger magical practice?
It's certainly part of a really wide array of methods. For me, a little bit of background about myself. I am vocal about having ADHD, so that kind of, the profile of that type of person is going to have a ton of interests, and they're not necessarily going to be as focused and deep as someone who finds themselves, you know, able to think about one particular thing. So for me, it's kind of like a wide net with maybe a shallow delving into all things, and I imagine that I would probably categorize myself as a chaos magician if I knew more about it, but I do kind of maybe deviate from that in that I do have some ideas that I kind of stick to always, and it's I'll entertain the idea and the possibility of other thought processes, but there's kind of a thread, so maybe that would prevent me from being classically a chaos magician. But to kind of be more specific, technological witchcraft is something that I definitely do more than just emoji magic. I think I mentioned that I'm an artist, but sometimes when I'm doing digital work, underneath a chunk of color, I'll put in a sigil, or pretty much always if I'm doing something physical, I'll carve a sigil into a candle. I will, you know, make symbols for myself that I'll put on paper and, you know, maybe tuck into a piece of jewelry. I guess the main element that ties everything together is there's almost always some sort of visual aspect to the products that I make with my magic.
So she'd been trying all this stuff, and I wondered, has she found any positive results?
I haven't really had too much success at the moment, but I think that what ended up happening is I kind of had these, I made these attempts in a time when I was trying in the wrong way to establish my art, if that makes sense. And so maybe instead of becoming successful, the roadblocks to my success became apparent to me. And so I started getting, you know, treatment and medication for my aforementioned, you know, ADHD at this time. And it's really changed the way that I kind of conceptualize, you know, my art. I mean, when you have something mental going on and you get medication, it's going to change a lot of things about your life. So, but I kind of believe that I'll read tarot cards a lot, and I find that sometimes when you go looking for a certain result, the more helpful thing will present itself. And when you go putting out these efforts to kind of go in a certain direction, maybe it's not that you end up in that direction because of the magic, but the magic will kind of clear the shroud around what you need to be doing. So I think that that's what happened at that time. I do think that, you know, with emoji magic, I've seen a little bit more success. I mean, like anything, success is relative.
So we move from more general results to the first emoji spell that she had talked about in the interview. How had her boyfriend's job interview gone?
Well, we're still waiting to hear back on it, but it's not a total no. The interview was successful in that he did a good job, I guess. So, but we are still waiting to hear back about that. I won't name names, but it is a company that's a large corporation, so they have a lot of bureaucratic things to take care of in that process.
So I asked her, if people were interested in learning more about Emoji Magic, where should they look? What should they do?
Well, so from my experience of when I've been looking into, you know, technological witchcraft and the likes, it's nowhere really established comparatively to, like, Wicca or traditional paganism or, you know, again, like the kind of more very structured ritual magic. So there's really no guidebooks or anything official like that. Maybe that's, you know, a calling for someone like me to write something, but I haven't really found any definite resources. Most of the time, you know, the closest thing that you're going to find to any type of guide is going to be maybe a post on Tumblr. So to people who are interested in this, maybe search, you know, emoji magic or techno witchcraft, urban witchcraft, what have you, on Tumblr. But it is kind of like a headfirst exploratory process for those who are wanting to utilize this method.
And so we had covered most of what I wanted to talk about, and after thanking her again for talking to me, I asked her, since I had her on the line, is there anything that she wanted to say in particular to other people who were engaging in magical practices?
Well, I've never really been presented with this opportunity. I guess my biggest thing would be, don't get so caught up in dogma, because part of the beauty and part of the draw for a lot of people of using these types of means of spirituality, whether it's spiritual or, you know, looking for tangible results, the dogma is what drives people away from a lot of institutionalized religion. And I see a lot of people who think, this is written in a book, and it's, you know, therefore the only way you can do magic, and that's, you just get creative. You know, the worst thing that's going to happen is that nothing happens.
So thank you to that anonymous person for being willing to give their time to speak to me about this. And like I said before, emoji magic, it's a form of sigil magic. Give it a try. And at the end of the show, we'll talk about how you can make your own magical sigils. But before we get to that, this is sort of a serendipitous interview. I bumped into a guy, and we started chatting. And he saw that I had some esoteric books on me, and so we started talking about that. It turns out that he had a skinwalker in his family. Which is interesting. So skinwalkers are basically malicious witches in the Navajo tradition, and for the most part, people are terrified to speak about them. There's this idea that if you talk about them, it's going to bring you a lot of trouble. Like, people are very, very scared of these. And because they're super reluctant to speak about it, it's very hard to find any information on it at all. When I sort of set up an interview with this guy to talk about skinwalkers, I tried to do a ton of background research so I would know sort of like the right questions to ask, and I had an incredibly difficult time finding anything. But luckily, that just makes this so much better to have this interview, because now we have a source of information on this. So we met in a bar that got a bit loud, so there's a fair amount of background noise, but you can still hear what he's saying, and that's sort of the important part. And he, again, once again, only agreed to do this basically as long as he could remain anonymous, and also with the understanding that, like, because I met him in a bar in New York and he was far enough removed geographically from the reservation that his family lives on, like, that sort of distance, that's all that would sort of make this possible, because he was also, like, concerned about talking about this. So I really appreciate him sort of taking the time, but also kind of taking the risk, such as it is, to speak openly about this. But yeah, so we recorded in a bar, and there's a bit of background noise, including a pool game that was going on nearby, which, if you, that comment about me almost getting hit at the beginning of the interview was basically because the cue was coming very, very close to my body. So there is a pause in the middle of the interview where we waited for some noise to die down, but here's a conversation about skinwalkers. I'll see you on the other side.
I feel like it's just a matter of time before he hits me. Okay, so let's start like with basic stuff. So you grew up on a reservation, or you spent time on a reservation?
Yeah. So I grew up on a border town, which is like just off of it. My extended family was on the reservation. I would stay with them like Christmas, holidays, summer, stuff like that.
And where generally was this? Like, you know?
Yeah, so northwestern New Mexico.
Okay. Do you describe like the sort of the area to me a little bit earlier? Like, how would you like set the scene?
So just off the reservation, like in the town that I grew up, the towns, it's kind of like a weird area to be in. There's no like defined area. Where I grew up in was like Farmington, Kirtland area. It's a lot more populated than the reservation, which was like just completely bare. So in some areas you can go like miles and miles and not find anyone for a long time. So the town that my family, I don't even know if you call it a town, it's kind of just like a group of houses.
What's the, like, if you had to like estimate the population, what would you say?
Well, of the town, I don't know, the village, I guess, that where I would stay, it's less than 200.
Okay.
Way less. Maybe way less.
So, at night, it gets dark, right?
Oh, yeah. It gets terrifying dark.
Good description. Speaking of terror, so, just for, like, a basic overview, because, like, I was talking to people about the idea that I was going to, like, talk to somebody about this, and a lot of people don't even, they've never heard of a skinwalker. Like, what would be a good sort of short description for somebody who doesn't know what we're talking about?
Well, the closest thing that I could say is probably a malicious, like, person who is involved in magics, stuff like that. Like, they can transform into animals. They're often, like, evil and all, like, very malicious toward other people. Then, like, the opposite would be, like, a regular witch doctor, a medicine man.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So it's kind of the opposite.
So, like, an evil medicine man.
Yeah.
How does one become a skinwalker? Are you born into it, or is it just, like, a...
Oh, boy. If I did know, I probably wouldn't tell you, because that's kind of rough spot. I know... Well, can I just say that, it's actually really weird. I asked my mom first just to, like, ask about the safety of this, kind of, like, talking about this. She did say it's a matter of, like, how embedded you are into the culture.
Okay.
So she kind of kept me out of it, but I was, like, near enough with my extended family that I know a lot about it, but not enough to be, like, feel particularly concerned about it. But I just want to say, like, anything that... Like, I could get a lot of, like, flack from back home, like, anybody, like, close family, because my immediate family is very separate from the rest of our other family, so, yeah, but, I know that there are people related to me, one person in particular, he's, like, my dad's cousin, he was never officially said that he was, like, a skinwalker, but it was very well. It was kind of like known.
Open secret, kind of?
Yeah.
So, how would you know, like, beside, like, the fact that, like, it was sort of family knowledge, how would you know someone's a skinwalker or not? Is it, like, they look different? I mean, because, I mean, they can transform, but, like, are there other telltale signs?
Nothing, like, striking. You just kind of have to be in on that kind of knowledge. One thing I knew from growing up is, like, if you see them walking early in the middle, early morning, like when the sun has maybe not even risen yet, and their hair is wet, and they're walking, like, on the side of the road, that's often, like, considered a sign of, like, this person's a skinwalker. Like,
do you know why that would be a sign? Like, are they doing something at night?
How I came to understand it was that they had just came out of their transformation from an animal, And so their hair is wet from doing it. Like, it's just like a side effect of doing this transformation.
Okay. So what kind of malicious activity would they get up to, typically?
A lot of curses. I've heard many, like, stories about how someone's been cursed with, like, being sick, like, having an illness, like, in some area on their body, or, like, a lot of, like, bad luck in certain areas of their life. I know of this one girl. I forgot exactly how she knew she was cursed, but she went to a medicine man, and the medicine man told her, like, yeah, you're like cursed. It's like a real thing. So, but I don't know. It's just like this negative energy that's all of a sudden come out of nowhere. It's you can tell you're cursed.
And so, if you think you've been cursed by a skinwalker, the thing to do is to go to a medicine man?
Yeah, that's the best thing to do. Go to a medicine man immediately.
Do you know any stories of, like, the person you knew went to a medicine man, and he told her she was cursed. Did he tell her what to do about it?
Yeah, so what she had to do is he directed her to go at night to this specific spot in some rural part of the reservation and dig something up and, like, destroy it. So she did. She actually went there and she found exactly what he described, but it was, like, not... It just wasn't in the time frame where he could go, like, put it there.
So she went, like, immediately.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
What did she find?
I don't know exactly, but I know this has happened before. Like, it's so weird. I know two separate stories of the same exact thing happening. It's kind of different for different people what you find there. My mom, she was helping someone when she was younger break this kind of curse. And when they went to go dig it up, it was a buckskin.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was, like, buried underground, and they had to destroy it. And when they dug it up, it was, like, something was wrapped up in it, and it started moving around by itself.
Jesus.
Yeah, they had to, like, shoot it 4 times. As 4 is, like, a sacred number for
animals. Okay. I thought that was really cool. Because I feel like if I were in that situation, I would never shoot a thing once.
Yeah.
Do you have any... So, like, you've been hearing stories about this for a long time. And so, like, people are sort of reluctant to talk about this. Is it because they're afraid they're going to call... Like, sort of talking about you, like, you're sort of asking for trouble?
Yeah, exactly that sort of thing. Especially for Navajos, like, you just don't... Like, don't talk about it. Don't stay away from all kinds of, like... Like, skull iconography, like, avoid it. Do not wear it. Do not carry around snakes. Like, longhorn skulls, especially.
Yeah.
Those are, like, really common. But don't, like, bring that to you. Having that kind of, like, death symbol around, it kind of attracts that kind of bad energy and stuff like that.
Okay. How common are these like, is it sort of like every town probably has, like, the one person you think might be it, or is it more like you'd encounter this between towns, like there's sort of a stranger out in the wilderness?
Probably each town, I would say. I mean, there's so many small towns to go to, and, like bigger towns to go to between each one. Like, I know where I grew up, or where I would grow up on the reservation. But there was definitely, like, that side of my family, because everyone in that area pretty much knew each other for, like, a long time, so they'd be like, yeah, that person's definitely, avoid them, don't go near their house, like, at night after sunset, like, just don't do it.
But that's, like, that's how bad it gets. Like, it's sort of like, if people think you're a skinwalker, they'll just sort of avoid you, like, they don't do anything, like, they're not gonna, like, run you out of town.
No, you'd probably get cursed if you tried to do that. And even if you did, like, try to confront them, they will probably run you out of town. Yeah. And, yeah, that was, like, a small... That one I don't remember so much. I do remember that happening when I was younger to somebody. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I remember that was, like, the story. Like, someone had married someone into, like, an outsider had married into our family. They found out, kind of asked about it, and then they were like, you have to go. Like, you can't stay here anymore. So this person had to leave, like, as soon as possible after being married into our family.
Did they take their spouse with them when they left, or was it just sort of like they're dead to you now?
See, I know it. Like, well, I've heard about it happening. I'm not too sure of, like, all specific details. I know that much.
So are there any sort of like rules one might want to keep in mind or something like this? Because I remember I heard somewhere that that a skinwalker can't come onto your property unless you invite them. When I asked you about that, I think you said that's not true, right?
Yeah, I haven't heard that one before.
Okay.
Generally, if you find someone walking around in like early morning with wet hair, avoid them. Don't leave your like hair around. Like that's for us, I know at least, like hair clippings, nail clippings, any like piece of yourself, like they can curse that. Like if you've recently had an encounter with them and then you've gotten this bad look, like this bad energy around you, that's a telltale sign. Usually it involves like leaving something behind. I know for a long time, people in my family believe that like my parents' divorce was blamed on this, the one skinwalker that we knew in our family. Because he was after. He always had to think for my mom. So it was always kind of like really presumed that it's just always a lot of bad luck following her. Whenever he was involved, especially.
So I've done a little research into this, and like I don't know how trustworthy the sources I've found are, but like I came up with something like along the lines that like there's an importance around names. Like if you know the skinwalker's name, that's a problem for you, or is it just sort of like knowing who's like a skinwalker? Like if you know someone's a skinwalker, that's trouble. Or like does the name have some particular?
The name does have importance to it. Knowing someone's name and knowing that they are a skinwalker is a big thing. Again, the whole running you out of town, like they will run you out of town if you confront them about it, like and you know they're who they are.
Yeah.
It's really bad for you, not and for this person. But, knowing a name is important. I don't know how much, again, like I grew up around it, but a lot of people would avoid trying to tell me. So a lot of the stuff was like I would really like ask my mom, like, I have to be serious, like, is this true? And she'd be like, yeah, this is like all the therapy stuff that my mom told me.
So back to the shapeshifting for a second, turning into animals. Are there like a specific set of animals that they might become, or is it?
I can't talk about like their. I couldn't say like how much they're capable of.
Okay, totally fair.
I'm just out of that side of the.
I mean, if anything, I mean, for, like the reason why you're capable of talking about this is like, because you're like.
Because I'm distant from it.
Yeah,
I know my mom like has some terrifying stories like on the reservation. Like, I don't know if you would be interested in hearing about that.
She's just, sure. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So my mom, she was actually. I know I kind of told you a little bit about this before. How she, her mom, her grandma always knew that there was something like good about my mom, like there was some kind of energy around surrounding her.
Yeah.
And other people saw it too. So like the known skinwalker guy, he knew this. People who like came in contact with him, like people who accepted that they had something about them, like they know and they've like grew up in it and worked with it. They knew that he was bad news and that he was after like something that my mom had. My mom, she grew up in the reservation. Her grandma was new, like medicine men, skinwalkers. She all involved in that, and she would like take my mom or with her to different places to do different rituals and stuff like that. It's kind of a terrifying time in her life for her because she didn't understand a lot of like what she was doing. I think it's just one of those things that don't follow on the male side, unfortunately, of my mom's family. Because her brother was never like, she would be left at home. He has some terrifying stories too. Like he would hear things like on the roof of their house, like just like kind of running around on top of them whenever he was left alone on the weekends, like when they were doing their powwow stuff. Terrifying stuff like that, because they grew up like on the reservation, not not near a lot of things.
Oh my god.
But yeah, she is terrifying. And one of the most interesting, sorry, just like sweeping.
No, I mean, I can do this later.
Yeah. My sister actually. This is one of the most interesting pieces of like something convincing for me that this exists. When my sister, she lived in Tempe, Phoenix, so it's like southern Arizona versus like northern New Mexico. My mom and her boyfriend then, they were like going around my old like house, and it's kind of in this like valley, like arroyo, like river valley area. It's really like wooded.
Okay, so you're saying, so your uncle would be home alone during the powwows.
Yeah.
And this, oh, this is your sister. Your sister.
Yeah,
is
my
in,
sister.
Right. Okay.
My sister. So she's off in Tempe, finishing her degree. And my mom and her boyfriend, they're back home, like 1,000 miles away. And so my mom and her boyfriend are kind of exploring the wooded area around where she grew up. And my mom knew that there is an area that they shouldn't go. My grandma told her that it used to be like a skinwalker. Like it was a skinwalker's place, like just don't go around it. And they were coming up on it. And she said, I've never been because I'm just not going to go there. She's described it as a kind of a clearing in this like really wooded area. And it's got like a windmill, what do they call it, windmill?
You mean the...
Like panels that make the windmill?
Yeah,
those things.
Okay.
Kind of sticking in the ground around.
So like it's not upright, it's like it's falling down, or there...
So like each, I don't know, maybe like it spins around like the little prongs, they're kind of stuck in the ground, like a fence clearing kind of thing.
Okay.
That's how she described it to me.
Okay.
But yeah, it's clearing, like don't go there. My grandma's told her so many times, she's like, don't go near there. And so now that they're older, they're going to explore down there. And it's starting to like, the sun is starting to set. And my mom gets a phone call from my sister, who's 1,000 miles away. And my sister said, I just got the worst feeling in the entire world. Like, I don't know what you're doing, but I like feel that you're in danger. Like, I just needed to call you like right now and just say like, be careful wherever you are. I don't know what you're doing.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Did your sort of like they leave immediately after that? Like,
yeah. No, my mom was creeped out. She and her boyfriend booked it out of there. So yeah, it was terrifying. My mom still like talks to me about that every day. She like it's just like the creepiest thing ever. And later my sister, she told me that she'd actually had dreams about that place before. Like in her dream, in that clearing, like as my mom described it, she sees this old lady who's a cannibal and like just like eating people, and it's so creepy that this recurring dream keeps happening to my sister, who like senses that my mom is around a specific area.
But your sister's never been.
She's never been. She's never been.
That is. So, is cannibalism like a common sort of charge leveled against skinwalking?
It's actually the first time I've ever heard of it.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. It's one of those creepy things that they would never. Like, again.
I mean, it's one of those, like, universals that I think that. Cannibalism in almost any, like almost every culture, like cannibalism is one of the few things that kind of pushes you outside of what is considered like human society. Mm-hmm. Like you're just not there.
Yeah.
You're excommunicated from.
It's such a huge taboo for everyone.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Except for like, I mean, sometimes ritualistic funerary stuff, but that barely even counts. It's more just like housing your loved one inside of yourself. We don't need to get into like, what is that, Yoruba where they do the banana? Okay, so that was... But you said your mom had, like, a number of, like, terrifying sort of things, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's more, like, creepy, intimate ones, but I don't know. I mean, she doesn't care. I, like, asked her, like, how much can I tell?
And I mean, I'm not gonna, like, say who you are, just, yeah, like, for, you know, your own peace of mind. Actually, if you want me to, I can try and distort your voice, too.
It's fine. Like, you don't have to. Look, I don't mind. I don't know how many people back home are gonna hear this, so.
I mean, hopefully. But you were saying, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yes. So one more creepy thing. I don't know how, like, this is, I don't know if this is just creepy for my mom, or just, it's just creepy, like, regular creepy, I don't know. Like, when she was younger, my mom, she had, my grandma had a medicine man staying with us, and this guy gave my mom creeps the entire time. Something about him freaked him out. So that was also around the time my mom had her first, like, period.
Okay.
And he kept her, like, blood and, like, her first blood. And after that, he would like stay with them, and he would follow her around and just like always tail her. Like, this guy would follow her around the house. He never, like, did anything except for, like, take her blood, which is the creepiest thing ever.
Yeah.
After that, just, I think,
yeah. How did he come to stay with them? Was he, like, a friend of the family?
Yeah, well, my grandma knew him.
Okay.
So he was invited into the house. From what my mom told me, she knew that he kept the blood, and, like, that there's nothing else going on, but she was okay with it. I don't really know how much of that, like, is just him being a creep, or, like...
I mean, menstrual blood does have a lot of, like, esoteric significance in a lot of different practices. Actually, so I went to a witchcraft festival they have in New York every year, last year, and there were a bunch of followers of Alistair Rowley there, and I was talking to them, and I was trying, like, I didn't want to just come out and say, so do you eat cakes made with menstrual blood, because that's a thing you would talk about. But I wanted to know. So I was just trying to be like, so these cakes you guys eat at these rituals, are they vegan? Are they not? And, like, they were just, like, totally should just be me. So there's apparently a very popular nerd novel in 1986 that had as part of it the suggestion that skinwalkers might use ground up bone.
Oh, yeah, well, I know bone is, like, involved a lot. Not even just skinwalkers, medicine men use it sometimes. It's weird how close, like, you are supposed to avoid bone, though. I know it's...
Yeah.
It's probably used in, like, different ways for skinwalkers versus medicine men. I know it's very, very close. Like, I've heard usage between the two.
Thanks again to that anonymous person for taking the time and the risk to speak to me about that. So the thing about this is, like, since there's not a lot of information and a lot of people are reluctant to talk, there isn't much of sort of, like, a big consensus on a lot of these questions, and there's a lot of things that people, like, they'll know some things but not others. So at one point in the interview, he mentioned that, I asked him, how do you become a skinwalker? And he said he didn't know. And that's completely fair, but I was able to find another resource where an interview of someone did and posted to YouTube about this had that information, or at least one sort of take on that information, where the person being interviewed, and I'll post a link to that interview so you can watch it in full, but his answer to that question was that you need to sacrifice someone very close to you, a loved one, a parent or a grandparent perhaps, and also to sort of gain the shape-shifting abilities of a skinwalker. There's one song you need to learn. If you can learn that song and do that song, then you can shapeshift into any animal you choose. Fascinating. It's really fascinating, also scary stuff. It's also interesting, just as it, like, personally, I find interesting that there's this tradition that skinwalkers, as much as they are, like, a sort of terrifying phenomenon, they are often hired for various purposes. There's talk of skinwalkers sort of being employed because of their shape-shifting abilities to spy on U.S. Army troops on behalf of people fleeing from them. Interesting tradition. I mean, I'll post a link to that other interview, and I mean, there's some other resources that I can direct you to if you're interested in learning more. But once again, this is one of those things where it's just some things are more secret than others in this sort of realm. But we're coming up on the end of the show, so I want to talk to you for a few minutes about how you can make sigils for your own purposes. So a lot of magical sigils that exist are they're sort of received, they're passed down. Various traditions have different symbols that are used for magical purposes that they can sort of, you can look up, you know, a lot of sigils are associated with the biblical King Solomon, who was one of these sort of important early figures in using demons in magic, but you can also make your own for your own purposes, and there are a number of techniques for this. I sort of first started looking into this because of how it's outlined in Peter J. Carroll's Introduction to Chaos Magic called Liber Null, which, once again, I know I've recommended on the show before, but you do yourself a favor and pick that out. But one of the methods he sort of outlines is this one in which you write down an expression of a desire, the thing you want the sigil to achieve, and then you go through this written statement and you cross out any repeated letters. So if you said, I want iodized salt, let's say, there's a very random example, you would cross out the second, so you'd like leave the I for I want, but you'd cross out all the I's that followed that, so the two I's and iodized and so on. So you take basically one example, like sort of every letter that appears in the sentence, and then you would just start putting those letters on top of each other in different ways, maybe shifting them around, twisting them, making them sort of grow out of each other, until eventually you arrive at one shape made of not necessarily all of the letters, but like letters from that sort of feels right to you. This is where things get kind of intuitive. You need to sort of keep working at making different shapes until you find one that feels magic-y, it feels witchy. And then you've basically got it. And so at that point, you just need to charge your sigil. But before we get to charging, there are other methods you can also use. Some people like to use the pictorial method, where you basically sort of draw a picture of the thing you're sort of after, and then you try to condense and simplify that picture into something resembling an alphabetical symbol. A lot of dogs in the park today. This is great. And there's another method, which is sort of the mantra method, where you basically do what you did with the writing out of a sigil in the first method. But in this version, what you do is you write out the thing you desire, and then you separate what you're saying into a series of phonemes, so like just the sounds, like I want would be like, there's I want like those are four separate sounds, so you separate those out, and then you start moving them around so that the order becomes a thing that is sort of specific to this situation, kind of weird, and also, once again, feels witchy. Like, you're trying, basically, your intuition is going to help you out a lot here in trying to figure out what you're doing. But once you've got sort of a sigil you want, either as a mantra or as a picture or sort of a series of letters placed on top of each other into one sort of symbol, now you need to charge it. And the way you charge it with, like, sort of magical energy, there are a lot of things you can do, but the basic sort of premise is that you need to basically hold this symbol in your mind while in a state of a sort of particular kind of attention. It's a difficult thing to describe, but essentially it's sort of those moments when your mind empties and there's a break in your conscious thought patterns such that you have basically, by keeping this in your mind, it is the only thing in your mind at all. And I mean, people can reach this state through meditation. A very common method for charging sigils is to use orgasm. Like, if you hold the sigil in your mind at the moment of orgasm, that can provide that sort of charge. Fear is another way people try to do this. So, like, you might, a good example of that is the comic book writer Grant Morrison, in hoping to get a project launched that he very much wanted, created a sigil for it, and then held that sigil in his mind, and also, I think, painted it on his chest as he went bungee jumping. So he sort of tried to charge that magical symbol with the energy of the sheer terror of falling off of a cliff. And I mean, some people will just try to work themselves into a state of exhaustion. I've personally tried a lot of these methods. I find what is very useful is if you redirect emotional energy. So if you suddenly find yourself feeling incredibly sad or incredibly happy, taking those feelings and then sort of in that state, in that sort of charged state, trying to direct your attention to the sigil in that moment. This can be very helpful. Also, I mean, this is a thing you can do, like, you can sort of make it a, you can make sort of like an event out of it, a ritual out of it. You can sort of set aside a day to do something, or you can just kind of like keep it on you and try to do it sort of in your day-to-day. Like, I've taken sigils and just sort of like stared at them on the subway, trying to like empty my mind of everything but the sigil. And that, I mean, I've seen, I think, some positive results. It's always hard to tell with this sort of thing how much of it is you doing that and how much of it is... Because, I mean, like, with something like this, it's also the possibility that because you're focusing on something so much that you're just more likely to do things to bring it about anyway. But it's very possible you're also realigning the probabilities of a chaotic universe in your favor, which is a nice thought. So give sigil making a try, and if you come up with anything you like... You know, send it to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. Or if you have any questions about sigil magic, by all means, contact us there. And if you have any questions at all about magic, please reach out. Our research team is very happy to help. And that's at intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next month. And who knows, maybe I'll record again in this park. It's very nice. And there are a lot of birds.